As the voice of Chicago innovation, each week we look for innovators who have set out to reshape entire industries. If you've ever stepped foot inside of Chicago's largest startup incubator, 1871, then you've noticed the wall of mentors, programming, and events, a chalkboard literally filled with access and opportunity. The man behind much of that is Senior VP of Programming, George Vukotic. George, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
I have to tell you, every time I see you, you always have a smile. We actually, the guests who are going to be coming on next mentioned this when we were downstairs in the lobby. Every time you run into George, you get a smile, you get some sort of a compliment or nice comment, and almost certainly an introduction of some sort, whether it's in person or email, like immediately afterward.
Well, I try. And the smile sometimes hiding other things, but it's always better to smile.
Me too.
Than a frown,
you just always smile at people. That way you can't get in trouble.
There you go.
So welcome. Thank you so much for coming in. Like I said, you are one of the nicest guys that I've met since coming into this thing. So enough kudos to you now.
Thank you.
What made you leap into the startup world? I know you come from an education background. A little bit diverse background, actually, but education before jumping into this. What made you do it?
So most recently, I was a dean of a college of business and, went to the College of Business. And originally, when I took the job, it was, George, we need you to come in and build programs and, innovation and new degrees. And so I took the job. And then shortly after I got there, it was, George, we need you to raise funds. So the whole focus shifted to fundraising. So it was an interesting challenge and dynamic. So I came up with a couple of different models. So one, we put in new programs, which made a difference. And then we also started to recruit students differently. We went to an international market for a number of business reasons. But one thing that stood out, even though people kept talking about entrepreneurship in a university environment, and I'm sorry if I offend any university administrators.
Please offend. I do this constantly.
But it's not the same as really doing it. So I started to look around and said, what else is out there? I sort of stumbled on 1871, but I started to see what they had, what the plans was, spoke to people like Howard Tolman, the CEO there, and said, there's something really good here. If we can make this happen or move this forward, there's a lot out there, not just in terms of money, but in helping see people be successful. And one of the things that really stands out is the energy and enthusiasm behind a person or the people behind starting a business. So when I saw that, I said, this is what I want to do, and hopefully I've got a skill set to make a difference. And so far, it's going pretty well.
I'd say so. Well, you've teed me up, so I have to go after it. So the two things. One, a lot of the schools have followed you, Northwestern, University of Chicago, Loyola, UIC, you name it. They have an office of some sort at 1871. Which is great, and I'm sure you've had something to do with that or some part of that or a lot to do with it. I will say the one thing that is disappointing to me, and I just actually had a meeting yesterday at Medill, and I went to Northwestern, so that's how that happened. And I said to them the same thing I'm going to say to you. The offices are often way, way too empty, and it's not enough current students in there. It's almost all people like myself who graduated 1, 2, 3 years ago and are using the space, which is great. We appreciate it, certainly appreciate the space. But they're not doing enough to get the kids in there. And as you mentioned before, you talked about the fact that it's different. The inside of the institution is very different when they look at innovation and they look at startups and entrepreneurial ventures. I think that there's a partnership that, and it's not 1871's fault, because having met with these guys, they're just so slow. They won't lend the resources. So I've offended them now. So you're off the hook. what can we do to get the school? Like for example, I wish you could have come to the meeting with me. I preached to them that when I left, I didn't know what the next step was. I had no idea, other than that Northwestern told me that I'm the best, so obviously I'm going to get a great job. Nobody said anything. How do you make money? And I think somebody's got to go there and let them know, you mentioned people looking for money, investment money. They don't prepare you for that. They don't prepare you for any of that.
Yeah. Now, I would agree. So first of all, I'd say I think one of the things I look for are areas of opportunity. So I have my list, areas of opportunity. And at the very top of the list is working with universities. So while universities do a lot of good research and a lot of different things, bringing it to the real world has been a bit of a challenge. And, my wife's in the medical field, and I equivalate it to her. She's a great dentist. She's a dentist. Yep. She's a great dentist. She has no clue how to run a business. So I go in there and I start looking at books, and I'm like, hey, you have $90,000 outstanding over 90 days. And her response is, what? And they're like, no, you can't have this. So I think what needs to happen, and I think the huge area of opportunity, is the universities have a lot of good things. And we actually just tried something with the University of Illinois Chicago. A number of their faculty members get research and grant money, and they develop products or get patents. But most of them have a day job as a professor and, quite frankly, don't know how to commercialize it. So we recently did a session where we brought in professors, in this case from University of Illinois Chicago.
What was the professor? I just met with the guy. He's building an app called BAM for a partner of mine, and he's – it's killing me right now, but I have a feeling it's probably the same guy.
Well, my contact there is Kapila Vigas, and she brought in a few of these with names that were longer than I could understand.
Well, his name is like that, so I was like, I don't want to say it because I'll mispronounce it, so I was putting the pressure on you.
So I'm in the same boat. So there's a couple of them, but they had some very interesting projects. So what I did is I looked at our environment and said, hey, we've got entrepreneurs here, but how do we bridge this gap? So we brought in some investment bankers. We had Silicon Valley Bank there. We had some angel investors, and it was a conversation around how do you take what a university has or what they're doing and then commercialize it. So it started out with UIC. We're now in talks with Northwestern. Yesterday was just out with the University of Chicago. So they've got they've created an office where they want to create the products or create services that are actually marketable. So we've talked to them. So I think that's a newer area of opportunity. And I do think you'll see the universities doing more in these environments. It's a little different because, again, university environment,
certain limitations that they have to play with. And something that if you haven't talked to Northwestern about it already, or at least Medill in particular, I'll talk to you offline about the program and how it was built. But in particular, one cool facet is going to be a summer immersion program where now they actually are working for a product, an end product. It's not just like you're in the vacuum, we're going to do this. Now it's like, create a product and actually we want you to try to take it to market. So that's a huge step in the right direction, because before it was like simulation, which is, you know, in my opinion, kind of worthless.
Right. So when I went to school a lot of years ago, it was all about simulations. Yep. Today, it's getting out there. I think internships, a lot of universities are realizing that, hey, you don't have to finish in 4 years. Take some time off, do a study abroad, go work for a company, do some internships. Yeah, learn how to, you got to be able to communicate and interact with people. So we've done some really good programs. We started out one with Kellogg, Linda Dare out at Kellogg. We talked to her, and she brought in a group of adjunct faculty who put together a three-part program, you know, starting your company, starting your board, going to market, and then the full-time faculty found out about it.
Do you remember some of the faculty members you had come on? I went ahead most of these guys.
Weinfurter.
Okay.
Weinfurter, Mark, Techstars, Math Ventures, Ackler.
Yep.
Mark Ackler, and there are a couple others. So we started building it that way, and it took off. And then full-time faculty saw that and said, hey, there's something here. So we started to build some more programs. We did a very successful program on analytics. And then the one thing we did with Kellogg in particular is we said, hey, there's probably some benefit there. So we opened it up to their alumni. And we had more individuals from their alumni show up than members at 1871, which is okay.
Yeah.
But it was a nice mix. And what it did, it allowed people to interact and mix. One of the biggest parts, you know, we talk about education and mentoring, but one of the biggest services I think we offer is just getting people together to talk about what their ideas are and what they're doing. So that's a big area of opportunity for us as well.
I agree. Well, before I get into that, actually, a little sidebar. I had a startup company actually just reach out to me with regard to dentists and their habitual failure from the standpoint of business, marketing, and analytics. They're working on a really cool app that's designed entirely for dentists. It's not, you know, something to be used like a white label, where the dentist can actually use it to keep an eye on those sort of things that your wife might struggle with. So when it gets to an MVP, I'll give it to you. You can
send them my way. We can be a test case.
We have 40 dentist tests line up for it, so it should be pretty cool.
There you go. Make it 41.
41 is a go.
All right.
So going back to your point, though, you know, with regard to a lot of the alumni from Kellogg and a lot of the, you know, some current students, some current 1871 people, I think when we get into the mentoring conversation and in workshops to some degree, it's vital if you're trying to disrupt things and you're trying to create a new startup company that the people who are working in that environment, the younger people in a lot of cases, need mentors that are not just telling them like how to run their business or how to lead them, but more importantly, that they're showing them this is what the business looks like on a day-to-day basis. These are the kind of people you're going to impact. These are the pain points. These are all the things that I learned. You know, this isn't the first time we've done this in this industry, and can kind of give them guidance, because you can't shake effectively. You can shake up anything. You can shake a can of paint if you want. You cannot effectively shake up a company with disruption unless you know what the intended outcomes are.
I think it's a very good point. I give you an example, and this isn't to be critical of large organizations.
Go for it.
When I first got to 1871, I had about 40 mentors, and it was just sort of, you know, show up, and whoever shows up, you know, it's fine. Now we've developed it, did a big needs assessment, talked to a lot of our members. Now we've got over 400 mentors, but I also now have a screening process. Yep. And you mentioned disruption, but I put a little organization or a little structure to the organization as well. So what we do now is, you know, somebody comes in and says, oh, I've worked for Motorola for 25 years, or I've worked for IBM or somewhere else for 25, 30 years, and I've mentored for all of those years. And that's not enough anymore, because if you're working in a startup environment, it's very different. So the people that tend to be the best mentors are people that have been there and done that. You mentioned Troy Hennikoff, for example, of Techstars. Now, here's a guy who's had multiple businesses, has done very well, has a lot of great insights. Individuals like him, using him as an example, are great mentors. It's not necessarily somebody who's been a mentor for 30 years in a big environment. So I look for somebody who can relate to entrepreneurs, first of all, and then work with them. And I've tried to give the program a little more structure. Now, for example, what we also do, I almost require everybody to work with the business model canvas. Yep. So that's a common tool. It's popular in the startup world.
Canvas.
Yeah, it's one page, nine boxes. What's your business strategy? And at least if you go to a mentor, rather than saying, hey, how's the weather or where did you go to school, you have some structure to it. So it gives both the mentor and the mentee a tool to work with and get started. And if nothing else, it's a starting point to work through and ask questions around.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have to show you the workshop that I do for startup companies. I mean, I use the same prototype basically for large enterprise companies as well, trying to bring that startup energy, if you will, to a company. I'll have to show you the workshop. It's a lot like the canvas, except it takes it to another level and people can kind of really figure out what does the end market, the end user look like. So that's something that maybe you might be able to use.
So, Scott, so I'm working on my January schedule. Did I hear you saying that you'd like to be in there?
I think loosely you did. A non-committal yes.
All right.
But yeah, so, you know, let's get into the enterprises a little bit here. I personally, when I have larger clients, enterprise clients, I try to bring them to 1871. Obviously you guys like that, but I do it for an actual reason. I think that when you're doing, you know, mentoring in particular, coaching in a lot of ways, doing it in-house makes it awkward sometimes for the people who are trying to learn. They feel like they're sort of constrained as to how they can talk, how can they act, and how do I address my superior when I've got a problem. When I take them out of that environment, I bring them into 1871, they see people sort of like organized chaos, and which I think is important. And it enables me to bring out some of the personality traits and some of the things that really they should be using more, but they're afraid to do. How do you see 1871 in particular, although expanded out to other, you know, type of startup incubators, how do you see a role for them helping large enterprise innovate? And I don't mean creating new ideas, you know, creating the products and ideas, but literally mentoring and giving them workshops to become better.
Sure. And we actually have a lot more of that going on these days. We have what they call innovation days.
Yep.
And this is where larger established firms working on new products or looking at new areas come in. You know, we'll bring a couple speakers in, either mentors that have worked in the field, you know, whether it's been healthcare or pharma or finance, to talk about things going on. And again, we have a wide range of mentors, everything from venture capitalists to attorneys to salespeople. So they come in, give a little structure background. And then we bring up some of our newer companies that are working in those areas, you know, whether it be healthcare, finance, or something totally new and different. You know, everybody's talking about Uber and the Uber and Lyft. Yep. Well, I had a company come in yesterday and said, hey, that's all gone. But what we're doing is we're putting iPads in those cars. For drivers that want to put iPads in there and have programming, they can make extra money. We get paid on the commercials. So people are thinking ahead. So it's always when you see the corporate environment, the corporate structure in some way limits you as far as how you can innovate. But you have somebody like this, and I think Uber and Lyft are a fairly new concept, and they're already thinking ahead of, yeah, we're putting iPads in there, we're doing programming, and they have some GPS connection where if you're going to Soldier's Field, they play sports programs and have related commercials or advertising to that. So the innovation is out there. It's just how do you incorporate it into what you're doing?
I agree, and I think the one thing is, like, as you mentioned, the larger companies are harder to, quote-unquote, break. You know, the agility factor is a problem. What I try to focus on with them in particular generally is you need to change kind of a culture and just a new influx of ideas. I can't change the way that you guys have, you know, treat your research and development money or your funding money that you've venture money that you've held on to. But I can help you bring better ideas to the table. And maybe that is what spurns more money to be spent in investment.
Yeah, I think that's a very great point. I can tell you, I've worked for IBM, I've worked for Accenture, I've worked for different companies, and there's always that fear of failure. Quite often individuals will take a conservative approach rather than a more aggressive approach. One of the things in a startup environment, you know, a lot of people are going to fail. It's okay to use the term pivot.
Yeah.
So you go a certain direction.
The
if it doesn't
anti-fail.
Work, yeah, the anti, yeah, you come back. And I've actually got an article coming out in Chief Learning Officer magazine about failing faster. And when we first talked about, like, fail faster, I'm like, well, the faster you fail, the quicker you learn, because you can learn a lot more from failure at times than you can from things.
I wish I would have known like this. I wish I knew that the failure moniker and like the hipness to it. I wish I had that like 20 years ago. I'm going through high school. I could have just like, dude, I'm learning. I am learning so fast.
Yeah, my C's and D's are okay.
It's failure. Failure is an option if you learn from it.
Yes.
When members of 1871 join, they have an intro. And you walk in and you tell them about programming. If you could have one piece of advice you can give to either new members or anyone in the startup or in a garage somewhere, as far as where to reach out and what they should be looking for as far as mentoring, workshops, that key piece of information that they need, what would it be?
So to me, it's the first thing you come in is look at the education offerings. You know, we're at a point now where we've created over 300 different workshops, everything from how to get money. And again, you should have a product before you actually ask for money, and how to go about it. So we've got that. We've got legal areas. What kind of corporate entity should you form? Yep. So we've got a lot of startups coming in, and they either don't have a corporate entity or the wrong kind, and there's reasons behind each. You know, how do you know what your product or service is? Have you tested out a marketplace? So we've got individuals that have worked in those areas, sales, development, and we bring in the big companies as well. So if you want to know latest about Microsoft, Google, Amazon, those companies come in as well and do mentoring as well as workshops. I mentioned to you that we've got over 400 mentors. Any given month, we have over 1,200 opportunities for individuals to meet one-on-one with a mentor. I don't know anywhere else in the world that they have that, but one of the best things you can do is find a mentor that can give you guidance. And I even tell individuals when they meet with mentors, if there's an area you're not sure of, ask the mentor who else would be a good mentor to talk to. Build a pattern, build a plan. Don't just try and get on a calendar and meet with somebody and just show up.
It's great advice. Thanks to George and our amazing sponsors from Insperity. You can watch this episode and more at Advisor TV. Stream us on the WGN Plus app or download each episode on iTunes. And remember, stay connected by following us on Twitter at TBT on WGN. Boom, that's a wrap. And now, your Coachable Moments brought to you by the Happy Hour Coach, Tim Ressmeyer, the official coach of Tomorrow's Business Today on WGN Plus.
George's work with mentors at 1871 is a fabulous example of how that kind of mentorship helps people who are going through the process of starting a company and everything that's involved with that. As a coach, I work closely with mentors as well in order to offer something slightly different from the mentorship experience that founders and people who are running companies need. Behind all of the experience and all the decisions that have to be made, the ups, the downs, there's a human being behind that. There's an individual, a CEO, whether they're young or old, or a founder, who has to make decisions. And it's really tough sometimes to do that alone. And mentors are extremely valuable because they've been there and they offer that kind of experience. But as a coach, usually I develop a longer lasting relationship with those founders. And so, you know, the things that the ups and downs through the development process, the launch process and whatever, there's a consistent voice to work with the leader and his team. And as that team, as the company grows and more members are brought into the leadership team, a coach is available to help work with all of them with the leadership development and the training. So mentorship is great, as is coaching, and they partner very well in a lot of companies. This is Tim Ressmeyer, the Happy Hour Coach with Coachable Moments.